From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, for the second time this year, we welcome Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren for the hour. It has been a busy first year in the mayor's office for her, and we've got a lot to talk about, from economic development issues and projects downtown to the questions about inequality to the wider world around us, and I'm sure we'll have a lot of questions as well. If you want to join the program, listeners, you can call 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI right here in Rochester, 263-9994. We already have some comments and questions online, so let me start by saying thank you for taking an hour of your time to be right back here on Connections, Mayor.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm really excited about being here.
All right, well, let me start with the topic that a lot of people are talking about. How closely are you following the events of Ferguson?
Oh, well, I'm watching them every day. I think that the entire country is feeling for what's happening there and praying for some sort of relief.
Are you, it's not your city, it's not your state, but do you watch what the mayor and what the reaction of leaders there are, and do you have a sense that it's been appropriate or inappropriate?
I think that the leadership in Ferguson has failed. If you ask me, they have not stepped up to the plate to really give answers and to talk to people that elected them. I think that it's a very touchy situation to begin with. But at times like this, people want to, you know, have some sort of answers. And I don't think that they've been given those answers. And sometimes you have to say, at this point in time, we don't know. But you have to show up. And I think that they haven't shown up in a way that is responsive to what's happening in that community.
So, yeah, in essence, you're saying they may not be able to tell you every detail of what happened, but they could be much more transparent.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we weren't, you know, we just celebrated the just talked about the riots of 1964 here as a community. And basically, those were the issues that faced Rochester a number of years ago. And I am thankful that we've come a long way, but we also have a long way to go.
When it comes to policing, we're going to be talking in just a bit about some of the reorganization plans. There's a lot going on in Rochester. Before we get there, let's talk in a few more general terms. First of all, on Monday on this program, we talked about policing, police work, tactics, et cetera. And a common question we had from listeners is, do police need military-style weapons and gear at all? Do they really need it?
Well, I can say that for the city of Rochester, the only equipment I believe that we have is an armored tank, but we don't have military weapons.
Do we need armored tanks?
It depends on what's happening. If we have a major catastrophe here in Rochester and you may need to roll over some debris and other things, I can say that you want to have the equipment then and not need it then to need it and not have it. And so we're not talking about military style weapons or anything of that sort.
There is that old phrase, you'd rather have it and not need to use it, then need it, not have it, as you said. So so let me at least here kind of go down that tack, Mayor, and ask you about the question of, if police have military-style equipment, are they more likely to use it? And I ask that because when we look at Ferguson, you've got a community, and I'm not going to divide it and just say a black community versus a white community, because plenty of the people who are demonstrating now are not black. There's plenty of people who are demonstrating, joining in, a lot of white people joining in the protests, etc. But if you watch the coverage, a lot of people have said the most peaceful nights since the death of Mike Brown have come when the officers went back to their regular uniforms, they didn't roll out the big military-style equipment, they walked down the street by foot, and there was a bit more of a dialogue. When they roll out in those big, you know, big gear, mm-hmm. It almost creates a tension that makes certain things feel inevitable. Do you agree or disagree?
Oh, I agree with that. And let me just be clear on the armored tank, the tank that I was talking about. What we have is an armored vehicle, but it's not, it's unarmed.
Yeah, you're right. Fair enough. But go ahead, make your point. Because I thought that was clear, but at the same time, I think it's a technical point that should be made. So
right.
It's an armored vehicle.
That is unarmed.
That is unarmed.
Yes.
After the Puerto Rican festival, there occasionally are demonstrations that most of the people are they sing, they make some noise, they have some fun, they kind of try to shut down a corner of the streets, the police kind of try to make sure that they're keeping order. But this year we talked to Justin Murphy from the Democrat and Chronicle, who was riding his bike through it, and he said a lot of the people felt like, well, I wasn't going to throw this bottle, but you rolled up in what looks like a tank, and that makes it feel very confrontational. Did the police make a mistake after the Puerto Rican festival?
No, I don't think so. I think that we had a lot more order than what we had in the past when it comes down to that. And you want people to be able to celebrate their culture and have a great time in your community. But you also want people to get home safely. And I think in past years, people have in some ways felt threatened. They felt unsafe. And so the police department wanted to be prepared. Now, we will go back and we will talk to not only the organizers, but also the police department and people in the community to see what things we could do better, because you can always, you know, look for room of improvement. But I think that when it comes down to the number of arrests, the number of, events that happened, we were really, really calm this year than we have been in the past. And it's been because we were prepared for it.
When former Rochester Mayor Bill Johnson was on this program earlier this week, we talked about some of the numbers. You know, you look at Ferguson. 3, maybe 5 black police officers out of 53 in a department in a city that is 63% black, that's not representative of the population. I don't know the breakdown in Rochester. I know it's not quite that disparity is not quite that much, but I don't think it quite reflects population. And then, as Bill Johnson said, that creates a hard question, because you don't want to create just a quota. You can't say the police department must perfectly match the population. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you have even the most conservative writers online now, Jonah Goldberg from NRO Online, saying, you know, there are moments where a Danish cop is not going to do well in a Latino neighborhood, and a Latino cop might not do as well in a X neighborhood, and it helps to have a diverse police force. Is Rochester's police force diverse enough? Should there be more quotas? What direction would you want to see taken?
Well, I don't think that we can talk about quotas, because I don't think that it's a quota. I think that we need to have a diverse police department that reflects the community that it serves. But it's also about cultural competency. It's understanding people's culture, understanding that I know for many in the African-American community, sometimes when we get upset, our voice gets heightened. That doesn't mean that we're threatening or we're coming off as threatening. Someone that may not know our culture may think that as a threat, and they may react in a way that makes it a threat. And so I think that the reason why you need a diverse police department is so that you can talk about those types of things. You can learn from your officers about a culture that you might not have grown up in, that you don't understand, and they can learn from you. There are opportunities for growth across the board. And so it's not just about what an African-American or a Latino can give to a Caucasian officer, but also what types of information that they can provide back. And so it's a partnership. I think that, the biggest thing in any police department or any community when it comes down to police is about trust and understanding that this is a relationship. And in the relationship, that there must be trust, that I feel comfortable enough with you that I'm, going to share information. You're going to share information with me. You're going to talk to me respectful, and I'm going to talk to you respectful. And if that trust isn't there, then you have a problem. And so we are not where we want to be as a community, but we are getting there. Over the last couple of years, even when I was on city council, I worked very, very hard to increase the numbers of police officers, African-American, Latino, women in the police department, because I think that it's important so that you can reflect the community that you serve, but also help people develop that trust that they sometimes just don't have because they are not culturally competent.
So we're moving in a direction that is a little more reflective of the city population. We're not there yet, but in general, it's better than Ferguson. I know that.
Oh, absolutely.
But most departments across the country are.
Yes.
So you're seeing a better movement in that direction then.
Yes. As far as diversity in our police mm-hmm. department, absolutely. I think we just graduated a class a couple weeks ago, and it was the most diverse class that we've ever graduated in the police department, not only in people of color, but also of women.
If you're waiting on the phone to talk to Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren, we'll be getting to you in just a moment. Want to continue to sort through questions on police, and in her first year, you're taking a look at a pretty big project, which is the police reorganization. Now, first of all, let's talk about what's actually happening and what a timetable is, and then we'll talk about, you know, some of the dynamics involved there. So give us a sense of what's unfolding right now.
So what we did, the police department went through and they looked at 5 years of cost for service. They not only just looked at, you know, the 911 calls, but they also talked to people in the community. They talked to their officers and tried to figure out exactly what level of policing at any given time of day in a particular area you would need. Based on that data, they looked at where are those calls coming from? How many officers do you need in a particular area on every day when you talk about, you know, opportunities for, you know, some people go out on injury, some people are on sick leave, and some people are on vacation leave. And so one of the major concerns a number of years ago, rightfully so, was the overtime, because you could not switch one person from a certain section to another section without it being overtime. And so if the department is actually staffed correctly, you should not, you know, all things being equal, you should not run into this issue of increasing overtime as we saw in the past. So they wanted to look at the data. And now that they've looked at the data, they believe that breaking the city down into five sections. So five sections doesn't mean that there will be five, you know, police buildings, because what we're going to do is we're going to reorganize in place. Reorganizing in place, we currently have three police stations. We have one on the east side, one on the west side, and one downtown. The one downtown will be expanded, so we'll have to make some investment in the one downtown to make sure that it houses more officers and is able to actually patrol a larger geographical area that would include the South Wedge, the Inner Loop, and parts outside of the Inner Loop. And then the East Division will, two sections will be for the Northeast and the Southeast, as well as for the Southwest and the Northwest. Right now, the patrolling will break down into smaller beat sections. So a cop, one particular cop, will be assigned basically to one geographical area where they will be patrolling. And there's time for them to get out the car, to talk to the people that live in the neighborhood, to develop that sort of relationship where we're developing this trust here. If you see something happening, here's my number. Give me a call and I feel comfortable. Something happened down the street. Let me talk to you about it. And so you want to be able to develop that relationship so that you can try to deter crime from happening. This is not about being reactive. This is about being proactive and developing those relationships up front. You won't see the full rollout until March of 2015. Right now, because of the way that there's a lot of behind the scenes things that have to be done when it comes down to our IT system, as you know, with 911, as well as our police vehicles, that all has to be taken care of first. We also are going to you know, have an increase in captains. And so right now you have two commanders that command both the east side and the west side in an entire city. This will have five different captains, and the captains will be responsible for what's happening you know, on the lower level when it comes down to patrolling the streets. And so it gives people a better sense of who's in charge here. I know that car X, Y, and Z is supposed to be in my neighborhood and I haven't seen them, and so I'm going to figure out what's going on here. I think that it calls for accountability on both sides, and also it's a way to build that trust that we currently don't have all the time.
You've had members of city council and the police union say this is going to build morale. It's going to help us feel more connected to the neighborhoods. You've had some former Rochester police chiefs, Bob Duffy, Jim Shepard, saying they're not convinced it's the right move. Have you listened to some of their concerns? What would you say about their concerns?
Well, I think that they're duly noted. But what we know right now is, it's not working. We have and if you go back to incidences that happened last year when it comes down to police community relationships, you know that, that there's a problem here. And what's happening in Ferguson, you know, we don't want to happen here in Rochester. And so we want to be proactive, understanding the reasons why they moved from the seven, sections originally was mostly due to overtime. And so they just said, okay, we're going to split the city down the middle and, you know, and half the cops over here, half the cops over there. It was no method, rhyme, or reason. What we did, everything that we are doing is based on science, is based on data. And, you know, will it be 100% correct? We don't know until we go that way. But what we do know is what we're currently doing is not working. And the relationships with the police department are strained. We want to build on that. And I'll bring up something that we're launching next week. But we're launching a program with clergy on patrol, as well as, you know, teens working with our department, walking with police officers in the neighborhood to try to build up that relationship. And let people understand that this is a two-way street here. We cannot expect our officers to be and to act a certain way and to be respectful and all that if we're not going to reciprocate it as well. And so we have to build up those relationships on both sides and that trust on both sides.
To be clear, though, I know you're saying it's not working. But we're not on the precipice of a Ferguson if we don't change, right?
No, I don't think that we're on a precipice of a Ferguson. But I think that when I hear or what I heard, and we can bring up the Brenda Hardaway case here, that was a pretty pressing issue when it came down to the relationship with the police department and with the community. And so I think that we learn from it and we can grow from it. We don't want things like that happening in our community. And we have to be realistic about how do we work together to try and build up those relationships so that people understand I'm not your enemy. When I knock on a door, you know, it's my job to protect and to serve, and I want to be able to do that because I want to go home to my family safely as well. And so once we understand that this is not an adversarial relationship, this is a partnership, you change the focus from it being we are enemies to now we are people that are working together for the common good of our city.
She mentioned Brenda Hardaway. I'm trying to remember. That's the woman who was she pregnant, I think, and a police officer felt she wasn't complying. He ended up hitting her in the head, taking her to the ground to make sure that she would comply.
Yes.
That's the case, right?
Yes.
Now, you're indicating that that's obviously adversarial. Was that a case of they were both wrong, or there was a misunderstanding, or was one person wrong and one person was just not listening? I mean, give me a sense for your quick take.
Well, I think that
I don't want to relitigate
different,
the whole thing,
differing minds would, you know, look at the situation differently. You know, you have a community that looked at the situation as, you know, this woman was pregnant and it was an overuse of force. And you have another set of in the community that looks at it as, you know, she should have just complied. And so when you have those differences of opinions, then you have to find out, okay, well, what was the common ground here?
Right.
Were there things that could have been handled differently? And how do we learn from it as a community? And so I think that that's where, you know, as the mayor and, you know, I think that our police chief, that's how we look at things. You know, could things have been handled on both sides differently? And if they could be, how do we not allow this to happen again in this sort of way? And be proactive about it instead of being reactive.
That recalls for me an essay I read a couple days ago in the Washington Post by Sunil Dutta, who does some law enforcement training and a longtime police officer himself. Here's what he wrote in the Washington Post under the headline, "I'm a cop. If you don't want to get hurt, don't challenge me." Quote, "Here's the bottom line. If you don't want to get shot, tased, pepper sprayed, struck with a baton, or thrown to the ground, just do what I tell you. Don't argue with me. Don't call me names. Don't tell me that I can't stop you. Don't say I'm a racist pig. Don't threaten that you'll sue me and take away my badge. Don't scream at me that you pay my salary. And don't even think of aggressively walking towards me. Most field stops are complete in minutes. How difficult is it to cooperate for that long?" End quote. Agree or disagree, Mayor?
Well, this is the thing. No one's above the law. And so just as citizens have a responsibility and an obligation to obey rules and laws, officers do as well. So you can't take the law into your own hands on either side. Now, as you know, I was reading an article just the other day, and they were talking about how you know, the difference, you know, in what African American people will tell their sons. And, you know, and I have, you know, male cousins that are like my brothers. And, you know, this feeling of when an officer approaches you, the anxiety, the feeling of, you know, even if I'm doing something right, will they look at me as if I'm doing something wrong? You know, the reason why we launched the campaign to really diversify the police force was because there was a young man that was going to the University of Rochester that was walking home with his book bag on from the library at 1 o'clock in the morning on Arnett Street. Officers rolled up on him with, you know, guns drawn and told him to get on the floor. And, you know, had he and his parents not told him, when this happens, if this happens, we need you to comply. Do what they tell you to do, because what we want you to do is get you home safely. And that's exactly what he did. He got on the ground. He laid down. He, you know, said, I'm a college student. You know, here's my name. This is my information. You know, my ID is in my back of my pants. You want people to be able to walk away safely. And so I would say that the part of that is right is to say, if you, in the end, do what you're supposed to do and just comply so that you can fight it on the back end. If you're not alive, if they mistake something and they kill you, then you have a different situation that we're going to be dealing with on the back end. And so it's a fine line that you have to travel on. And that line is, officers are not above the law, but, you know, when you're looking at telling your child what to do, it's, hey, listen, if they ask you to stop, show them your ID, you do that. You come home, and if there was no reason for you to stop, then well, let's go talk about it, and let's go talk to the captain, let's go talk to the chief, and let's deal with that on the back end, which this family did. And we were able to, it did not necessarily stop the feeling and the hurt that the child felt, but he was able to talk to the chief about it and say, look, you know, this is a problem for me. And the chief, in turn, are able to talk to his officers about how could this have been handled differently? You know, after everything happened, could you have picked him up and said, hey, you know, this is what we were looking for. You know, sorry, you know, that we had to disturb you. Let us take you home. They left him. After you've pulled out, you know, so there are ways in which we can do some things differently, and that's what we need to do.
All right, we're going to get to the phones, and if you want to weigh in, you can comment online or by phone, and we're going to talk economics and much more with the mayor now. We've covered a lot of ground already. This is Alex in Rochester. Thanks for calling. Alex, go ahead.
Thanks for having me on, Evan. During the last election, there were a couple of forums in the Northeast, and one of their main focuses was the emphasis that money should be spent on need in the city, and you agreed with that concept then. But now that the neighborhood block grants have come down, you've decided they should be shared equally among all quadrants of the city, even though the block grants are based upon sections in the city which are in poverty, many of which are in the Northeast. What's led to your change of opinion?
Well, I think that you don't know what you're talking about. Because no decisions have been made as that, you know, as you have indicated about where community block grant dollars will be going. We have, and then my first budget actually reflects that we are taking the issue of poverty and need and children and families very, very seriously in our community, and we will continue to do so. I think that you have been misinformed, and no decisions have been made. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Alex, for the call. Let's go to Harry in Rochester. Harry, thanks for calling Connections. You're on with Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren.
Hi, Lovely. Why do you support two transit centers instead of one? Can you explain your statement, there are no buses in Mississippi? Now, you know, remember, thanks to you and Mayor Duffy, who told me, Harry, the RGRTA is more powerful than the mayor's city council. We now have two intermodal, quote, hubs in downtown Rochester. Now, regarding the development in Rochester, the Mortimer Street bus barn boondoggle is now being constructed on St. Paul Street. We had over 200 people come out to your city council asking you not to do it. You refused to meet with transportation expert John Robert Smith, former CEO of Amtrak, who now runs Reconnecting America in D.C., who was mayor of Midian, Mississippi. There we are, Mississippi. Developed a very successful intermodal transportation center and was here in Rochester to explain to City Council and you why we did not need to spend $52 million on the Mortimer bus barn, instead use transit-oriented development to build a cohesive, connected downtown Rochester. When asked why you didn't attend
Harry,
invitation.
You got to get to a question, Harry. Go ahead.
I want you to, well, you campaigned on I am black and I love God and Jesus, but you didn't get into how we can make a livable downtown through transit-oriented development.
Sorry, Harry. I'm going to let the mayor respond to that, but the premise that you campaign on I am black, I never heard that, Mayor, and unless I cut him off because I think that was an inappropriate line, but did I miss it? Was that the campaign theme?
Not at all.
Okay. I just want to make sure. So, look, if you've got blunt questions for the mayor, that's part of why she's here. But let's keep it a little bit more civil than that. I appreciate that. Now let's talk a little bit about what Harry was saying. He's got some questions about the project. Go ahead.
So when we look at, you know, downtown development, and one of the things that many people and, you know, Mayor Duffy, Lieutenant Governor Duffy, under his leadership, and he called together a lot of developers about, you know, how do we really, you know, revitalize our downtown? After meeting and talking to them, he decided that, look, you know, we needed to move the buses off of Main Street to a place where people could, you know, be warm in the wintertime. Our winters have been very, very brutal. We have people standing out on Main Street in the middle of the winter, someplace where it could be cool in the summertime for our children and our families, but also a place where we would allow for development to spark along our main corridor. Many of the developers said, look, you know, one of the things about our culture and about our community is people want to be able to drive up to the front door, run into their store, get whatever they're looking for, and come out. Or they want to be able to ride their bike or, you know, something right there on the main street. And developers had said then that, look, once we're able to have that situation, we will look to do more types of development on our main street. And that's where the idea of having a centralized bus station where people could come in the wintertime and come in the summertime and, you know, transfer to their destination in a place and in a facility, as many other cities have. A lot of cities, whether you're looking at New York City, they have, you know, Grand Central Station or the Port Authority, and we don't have that here. One way, I just was at a meeting yesterday with the city council where the gentleman said, listen, you know, I've been to Greenville, North Carolina, I've been all over the country, and our downtown, their downtowns don't look like this. And the way for us to rebuild our downtown, we have to be able to have shops that are able to be seen from the street, that people can walk up to, park on the street, and walk in the door. And we also have to be able to have a place for the people that are transient dependent to feel safe and also to feel warm in the wintertime and to feel cool in the summertime. And so that was what the decision was made. And that transit center is actually ahead of schedule. And we're excited at the fact that this winter, not one child will have to stand outside on the corner of Main Street or St. Paul and wait for a bus to get home or to get to work. And I think that that's very important. And that's an asset. And we should look at it as such.
All right. We're going to take the shortest break in radio. We're going to come back with Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren. We're going to talk about economic development, more of your phone calls, and some of your online questions as well. She's not running for office this November, and I'm sure she's really missing the campaign, but we're asking her some of your questions online about some of the other folks who are. So short break, more with Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on the next Connections, the latest on the efforts to eradicate Alzheimer's. We'll hear the difficult and very personal story of how it impacted someone you might not expect with this disease. And we preview the Labor Council's film series, the start of several discussions on issues related to labor, unions, and more. It's all coming up Thursday on Connections.
Harvard Business School is launching a new program online about which a question. Can they reach more students without diluting the brand?
Our approach is really designed explicitly to strengthen the brand by illustrating through these offerings what the quality of a Harvard Business School education is.
All right, if they say so. I'm Kai Rizdal, Online Education and the Ivy League Identity, next time on Marketplace from APN.
This evening at 6:30.
I'm Evan Dawson. Welcome back to Connections. Glad to have Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren here with us. New grocery store opened downtown last week. Hart's Grocers, right between the Little Theater and Tuvine. And you had to go back almost 20 years to when IGA left Midtown, I think, which was when the last grocery store left downtown.
So Wegmans.
So now here we are with Hart's Grocers opening up. I know you've been there.
Yes.
And I know the city, we had Matt Haig talking on this program about the city's support for this kind of a project. What's your take?
Oh, I think that it's exciting because we have not had a downtown grocery store in 2 decades. And I think that it shows that we are actually coming back and we are revitalizing ourselves. When you look at the number of new residences we have downtown and coming online with the development at Midtown, the Tower, as well as the Sibley Building, we want people to be able to eat, live, and shop in our downtown and in our city. And this is a way for us to make that happen. And so we are excited about Hart's Grocery Store. My daughter loves the cupcakes there. And so I think that, you know, we should look at this as an asset and as an indicator that the city of Rochester is basically, you know, we are on the move and we're coming back.
Last week we had the folks from Hart's on the program, and there were questions from listeners about whether these kind of projects downtown, the revitalization, the strengthening of downtown, take away the city's focus from impoverished neighborhoods. And there were questions about, hey, you know, this is downtown, great, it's got a new grocery store, but we're still struggling in certain places, and sort of it was kind of a where's our emphasis right now. What would you say to that?
Well, I think that you know, economic development money or money for capital is different than money for, you know, social programs. And if anyone looked at the budget this year, we made a real emphasis on making sure that we provided programs not only for people that live in our neighborhoods, but also for, you know, for our children that go to our recreation centers. You know, I was just excited to receive a letter from, you know, the Merchants of Genesee Street, where we are doing a pilot program now on Genesee and Jefferson, as well as on the east side of the city, where we have people out there every day cleaning the street. And the reason why we're doing that is because we want people to feel that they are important to us as a community, as a city. And your environment shows that. If you walk into a situation where there's trash lying around all the time, then you know that it's not a priority for you. But we have people out there on the streets, and everyone is noticing, not only just the neighborhoods, the merchants that are on these main corridors, but also the people that live in the neighborhoods. And they are taking the initiative to say, well, you know, don't throw that on the garbage, on the ground, put it in the garbage. We're also, last night, City Council just approved the cleanup of the vacuum oil site, which has been a project that has been on the books for a number of years that the Plex neighborhood, Dorothy Haw, has led and has championed to get that redeveloped and revitalized. In the budget, we are looking at the Bull's Head area, which is the other side of Genesee Street that has been on the books for a number of years, to see what do we need to do to actually demolish that United Cleaner site, clean it up so that we can get some better development in that particular area. When you look at what's happening on the east side, part of you know, even before with the cleanup, but Joseph Avenue and investing in the business association there and the Hudson Avenue Business Association and redoing this street on Portland Avenue, which is a major project that's coming up. We are focused on our neighborhoods, and we're focusing on making sure that they're clean, but also making sure that they have the resources within the community so that they can thrive as well.
A couple of online questions. Let me see here. This comes from Online Dem is the name. It's an online Dem. Could you please ask Mayor Warren about the divisions in the County Democratic Party and whether she intends to back a candidate for the new party chairperson in September?
Well, I do. Hopefully we'll get a vote. you know, my committee seat is being challenged right now. And so I'm hopeful to be able to get a vote. I have been talking to people that are interested in running, and I have not made a decision yet on who I will be supporting. I think that as a party, you know, we are you know, looking to rebuild and to heal old wounds. And I'm hopeful that with the new party chairman that he will be able to do that.
Is the mayor supporting the governor's bid for reelection is another question.
Absolutely. I think that the governor has really focused on rebuilding New York. He has really focused on how to help our cities thrive with a number of his investments. And I think that that's good for not only the state of New York, but also for the city of Rochester. Us being able to, with his support, win the IMCP designation, which is Investing in Manufacturing Community Partnerships from the federal government. And of course, Senator Schumer and Senator Gillibrand and of course, Congresswoman Slaughter's help as well. This is good for Rochester. Our universities and our colleges are doing really well. And I think that altogether, this is, he has been supportive of our area.
All right, let's get to the phones. This is Bonnie in Rochester. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yeah, hi, Mayor Warren. How you doing? I wanted to ask a little bit of a follow-up regarding the community development block grants. You were just talking about the development downtown, which you expanded to some other areas that you're planning to look at. You know, the truth of the matter is, though, that and Rochester's not an exception with this, is that a lot of the emphasis has been on development and for residential, fairly, you know, high and wealthy, with a lot of, you know, tax breaks for investors and companies. So, you know, it also then brings up the issue as counter to that, again, about the poverty that many of the neighborhoods experience in the city. And we all know about this because it's been talked about for, you know, not only years, but lately, weeks and weeks. So it really brings up the point of making a really serious, fair balance. And with the community development block grants, we have an opportunity to try to do that. So I'm going to ask you your reaction to the proposal that's being made now by the very people who, you know, had the candidates night in the Northeast, two of them, both of which you had attended as well, City Council, and supported the idea of looking at the most needy. So here's the proposal that's being presented and for you to react to is that the proposal is that with that money, that 100 homes be funded for repairs. These are repairs, as you know, that are serious repairs, roofs, windows, things that are fundamental. That 100 homes be selected for repairs for this money, and that those homes be taken from the most needy using the census tract, which is, of course, as you know, others might not be aware of it. They track all the poorest areas of the cities, and there's charts and everything to indicate that. So that would be a specific solution to implementing this idea of basing monies on the most needy, because the way it has been before is it's been more the quadrants, which probably have, you know, each quadrant has some people that have some need, of course, but the greatest number of needy concentrate in certain areas. So that if we take this money and give this particular solution to those people, that would be a good start.
All right, let's let the mayor jump in here. Go ahead, Mayor.
So the city over a number of years have had a number of programs that help homeowners actually either that need a new roof or need new windows and, you know, new furnace in their homes, help them to actually purchase those or to actually pay for it up front. And so right now we are looking at this particular program to see how we could help more people in a, you know, many of them need new roofs. That is the major issue here. But no decision has been made. There has been no changes to the program currently. And we are just talking about how we can do this more effectively and efficiently. In the past, what we have done is looked at breaking it down into quadrants, and we've broken it down into quadrants in the quadrants that have the majority of homeowners. So this isn't for people that have investment properties, but actually homeowners that they would be able to access. So So if you have the majority, a number of them in the southeast, the southwest, the northwest, and the northeast, and it's broken down in by quadrant. And so that's the way the program currently runs now. That is not enough for the need that we have. We will never have enough money for the need that we currently have as it pertains to housing for roofs and other things for homeowners. And so we're looking at and evaluating a way to deliver this program better. As we know, the federal government has basically reduced CDBG dollars, community block grant dollars, over time. This has not only affected the city's ability to provide funds for homeowners, but it also for programs, you know, social programs that we do. And so we have to start thinking about how we do things more efficiently and effectively so that we get the most for the money that we are going to invest. This is not about perpetuating and continuing a cycle or a problem. It's about trying to fix a problem. One of the reasons why the city started the focus investment strategy and have been very, very successful with that is because you focus on a particular area, you look at the needs, and then you make your investment there and you hope to build off of it. And in the areas that we have started to do that, you start to see the growth and you start to see it's taken off on the perimeters. So we focused in a Market View Heights neighborhood, and now you have the dental dispensary building that's going up. Conifer Realty is doing a Corpus Christi site. And so you're in what the city is going to do is we're working on the Main Street to make that more pedestrian friendly as well as the public market. And so we have to build off of successes because we don't have enough money to fix all the problems that we have. And we're never going to have enough money to do that. But we can do it smarter, and we can do it better.
This is John in Rochester. John, thanks for calling.
What you just outlined regarding the RGRTA was what the previous caller, Harry, was talking about. But you're trying to do it with local hacks, and you don't have a clue what you're doing, which is just as ignorant as the urban renewal in the 60s. So what your comment, there are no buses in Mississippi. Tell me, what did you mean by that?
Mayor, Can we at least establish from callers, before I let the mayor address that, the tone is a little on the uncivil side at times today. And again, I don't mind direct questions, but you know, Mayor, go ahead. Go ahead, Mayor.
The bus station will open in November. And we, let me just say this. As a community, we can talk about the positive things that's happening in our community, or we can talk about in the negative. We can talk about the crime and the shooting and other things, or we can be excited about the fact that we have a new grocery store opening downtown, that we have a new bus terminal that's opening up downtown, that our schools are being renovated, that our businesses are actually thriving and surviving, that we are hiring new people, and that we as a community are really focusing on how do we police our community better? How do we do this smarter? How do we as a society build each other up instead of tear each other down? As a city, as the citizens of Rochester, and as the citizens of New York, this is what we need to be focused on so that our children can have a brighter future. If we do not start to focus on the positive things that's happening around our community and in our city, we will be gloomed and doomed to gloom. I choose not to focus on those things. I choose to talk about the fact that Dorothy Hall, who worked for decades to get the vacuum oil site cleaned up, has finally seen the light and is able to say, well, this is something that I worked on as a community advocate, and it's something that's coming to fruition, that people can actually see the fact that their downtown is being redeveloped so that they could have actual retail shops. People come here from other places that go to the Strong Museum, that go to the Strong Hospital. And actually have to go outside the city to buy toiletries and other things. Well, now they have a site right here because of the work that the Mount Hope Business Association and the Neighborhood Association was able to work with the university and the city of Rochester to rebuild and do College Town. The fact that we can do Costco and invest in those living wage jobs for people that live in our city and in our community so that we can have opportunities so they can pull themselves out of poverty. I choose not to deal with and to focus on the negative stuff that, let me tell you something, the bus terminal, rather, someone likes it or not, will open in November of 2014. So you can get used to it. You may not like it, but it will happen. And we as a city will be happy that our children and our families will have a safe place as well as a clean place and a warm place to be in this wintertime while they're waiting for the bus. I choose to see that as a positive thing.
Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren in studio for a few more minutes with us here, focusing on the positive, as we can see on this August day here. Let me grab one more quick call. This is Pete in Rochester. Go ahead, Pete.
Good afternoon. The bus terminal does nothing for the people that wait at bus stops all around the community waiting to go downtown. Second, this idea that the downtown area hasn't hit a grocery store in 20 years is false. It is not true. Abundance Cooperative Market on Marshall Street has been serving the downtown area, a full-service grocery store, since 2001. And the store has its roots serving the community back to 1968. So the idea that there is no hasn't been a grocery store is false. And I would like to see an hour spent with somebody, a representative of Abundance Cooperative Market, on this program, seeing you spent an hour on Hearts last week or 2 weeks ago.
Actually, I've been to Abundance, and I've talked to them about them wanting to expand and to expand their co-op. And so I've been there, and I think that they do great work. It's a limited grocery store. It serves a certain segment of the population, and they want to be able to serve more people, and that's the reason why they want to be able to expand. And so John Greenbaum, who I've worked with for a long time, I believe is on the board over there, and now is at ABC. And so I've been over there, and we've talked, and I'm excited about more opportunities for them to actually relocate and grow their facility.
Yeah, and by the way, we didn't just spend an hour on Hearts last week. We had Glenn from Hearts in. We also had Heidi Zimmermeyer from Rochester Downtown Development. We had Matt Hagan. And the question was, what does that mean in the context of a larger downtown development? So just to correct the record on that. Okay, so we have a few more minutes left with Lovely Warren here, a Rochester mayor. You joined the Cities of Opportunity Task Force earlier this year. It's a group of about 30 mayors across the country that met to talk about inequality. You're not going to solve inequality in the next 5 minutes on this program, but I want to know if you view inequality through, you talked about giving people the means to pull themselves up, but there are all kinds of sort of political and policy debates about, you know, is inequality just a function of a free economy, or are we too far out of whack with policy? I mean, where do you start to address it, Mayor Warren?
Well, we looked at three things when it comes down to inequality. First is education. We know that there's an issue with how children in urban environments are being educated, or what type of education they receive, and how do we improve upon that? Do you expand access to charter schools, to private schools, or how do you help city schools actually deal with the issues that they're having around educating our children? And so we looked at more so how do we deal with this issue of universal pre-K and making sure that children have access to preschool, and what does that look like, what dollars are needed for that, what transportation is needed. And you know that between being 3 years old and third grade, that is the most formative years and can determine a lot when it comes down to educational access. And so as mayors, we looked at that. Second thing we looked at was, of course, income equality. The issue of how people are, being paid, and do they have, I just read an article or a a white paper from someone that from the CSEA who talked about the fact that, you know, because people are moving more towards part-time work instead of full-time work, that it is actually hindering people's ability to pull themselves out of poverty. And looking for more ways to create full-time jobs, what does that look like and how we as mayors can work together to try and try and change that. We also looked at issues when it comes down to social. What are the policies that are in place that prevents people from being able to access? What are the barriers that are there that prevent access to new and improved opportunities? Is it transportation? Mm-hmm. You know, if the new manufacturing facility is being built outside of the city, how are we going to get people from inside of the city out there? How do we get people trained to actually have the skills to go into these new jobs that are coming online? As a community and as a division of mayors, that's what we want to focus on. But the last thing that we looked at was when it comes down to broadband access and access to internet. And the fact that people that live in many urban environments don't have that access to the internet the way that they should have. And so I had a meeting with the people from Time Warner and Costco a couple weeks ago where we talked about Comcast.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago where we talked about how do we, if this merger happens, bring more access to broadband access to our families in our most challenged neighborhoods, even into our community centers. How do we give them the access that they need in this, basically this IT market, this technology market. And so we're hopeful that as we continue those discussions, mm-hmm. that those three areas we will be able to improve on while working together and bringing those policies to the federal government together.
We barely even scratched the surface, and now we have to say goodbye to Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren, but I hope that we can see you back here soon enough.
Sure.
And it's nice to see you here in studio as well. I know it's been a busy two-thirds of a first year for you. So thank you for taking the time to come in and join us.
Well, thank you for having me.
And thanks for all the questions, especially those who came in online today. Always nice to see people participating through our mobile app and the various platforms of communications. Thanks to Dave Campo, our engineer today behind the glass. I'm Evan Dawson. This has been Member-Supported Public Radio. You're listening to Connections, and we'll see you on Thursday.